like to look into a passage of scripture that we've all read. I'll write something on the board. The reason I can say I knew we all read it is because we just read it in Sunday school. So I'd like to talk to us today about wild grapes. I'd like to turn to Isaiah the 5th chapter, and we're going to read, by and large, the same verses that we read for our Sunday school. It says, "Now I will sing unto my well-beloved a song of my beloved, touching his vineyard. My well-beloved hath a vineyard and a very fruitful hill. He fenced it, gathered out the stones thereof, and planted it with the choicest vine, and built a tower in the midst of it, and also made a winepress therein. And he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. And now, go to, I'll tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up, and break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down, and I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned nor digged, but there shall come up briars and thorns. I will also command that the clouds, that they rain no rain upon it. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plants. And he looked for judgment, but behold, oppression; for righteousness, but behold, a cry." So, this morning, as we consider this passage, we've all had an opportunity to share some thoughts in our Sunday school time about this passage of Scripture. It's focusing in the Sunday school lesson about the song of Isaiah here. When we read this at home the other evening, I began to really think about these wild grapes. So I'd like to share with you some of the things that come to my mind. First off, I'd like for us to recognize, as already been mentioned today, that this is kind of like a parable. And Jesus told many parables in teaching the people the things that he taught them. And a parable is something, it's a simple story used to illustrate a moral or spiritual lesson as told by Jesus in the Gospels. It's also this story, this account in Isaiah is like an allegory. An allegory is a story, a poem, or a picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning, typically a moral or political one. Probably the most famous allegory as far as the story that we're acquainted with would be the Pilgrim's Progress. That the Pilgrim's Progress is a book, it's an allegory of a spiritual walk with the Lord. And many times when you read Pilgrim's Progress, it's easy to get hung up on maybe some of the technical details and the probability and possibility and all of those kind of things, but it helps as you read through the Pilgrim's Progress, the book that was written many years ago, is good for us to stop and just remember this is an allegory. It's been written to explain the test, the trials, and the triumphs of a Christian life. So this account in Isaiah, it says, it's a song. And he says, now I will sing to my well-beloved, the song of my beloved, touching his vineyard. I'd like for us to consider this as an allegory. It's talking about some spiritual things, a relationship between God and mankind. So in verse 1, the term well-beloved is used. If we turn to Mark, the 12th chapter and the 6th verse, there's a parable of the vineyard there. And the well-beloved in that parable was himself, I believe. It was Jesus. So I said earlier this morning in Sunday school that I wonder if this, he says, I will sing to my well-beloved. We know that Jesus was a well-beloved son. Maybe that's what he's talking about here, is the person of Jesus. He says, I will sing to my well-beloved. Who, as a father, do you share some of your most important things, the things you want to pass on to another generation? I know what I've done as a father. There's been times that I've passed on things to my sons because I want them to know. I don't want them to be in question. I don't want them to be uncertain about something. I want them to know at least the things that I know. I don't want them to have to struggle. I want them to be able to be stronger and more capable than I've been. And God, I believe, has some of those same desires for us ultimately, but by all means for the person of his son. He says, I will sing to my well-beloved. There's no one, no person, either a literal person or the person of Christ. There is nothing that's more well-beloved than God's only begotten Son. So he says, I will sing to my well-beloved the song of my beloved, touching his vineyard. People, the souls of mankind, I believe we all recognize in this allegory, is the vineyard of his beloved Son. It is today, is it not? So he says here, I will sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved, touching his vineyard. The thing that belongs to him, and it's not just any arbitrary thing, it is his vineyard. And he says, I'm going to sing this song to him. And this well-beloved my well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill. And we talked a little bit about the Hebrew words that comes from. It comes from the words sun, horn, and oil. It's in the other order. The horn is the Hebrew word that was used here, and it's been translated hill for us. But when he says very fruitful, he's talking about the sun and the oil, the posterity of this vineyard. The production, the increase of this vineyard. I've found that grandchildren are wonderful things. And I enjoy their little smiles and their little touches and their kisses. And for them to whisper Papa is one of the sweetest things that you could ever realize. So he says here, my beloved hath a vineyard. And it's not just any old place that a vine is growing. It's a vineyard in a very fruitful hill, is what our King James Version says. He goes on to say, I'll just back up a little bit here. In the book of the Song of Solomon, well beloved is used to refer to what I believe many times we consider the person of Christ as the well beloved. All right? And he says also, he's talking about this vineyard being something that would offer increase. A vineyard in the scriptural times was the cash crop. It was the thing that brought in the revenue. That was the thing, you know, we do a lot of things in our efforts to sustain life, just, you might say, because they have to be done. We clean our homes, we do our routine maintenance on our houses, whether it's fixing things that become deteriorated or things that don't work. We do all of those things not because we're doing it for a profit, but we also have occupations that we engage in to bring spending money in. That's how we accumulate anything in life. That's how we make purchases for things that we can maintain. We buy something and then we got to keep it up. So the vineyard was something that brought in revenue. It was something that was a marketable product. When they were finished, it was something that they could give in exchange for other goods. All right? So in verse 2, he continues with the description of this vineyard. This vineyard that he identifies in verse 1 as being in a very fruitful hill. And in verse 2 he says, "And he fenced it and gathered out the stones thereof and planted it with the choicest vine." I remember a few years ago we went through Kentucky, and they had a lot of, in at least the area we passed through, I'm not saying this is a statewide thing, but there was a lot of stone fences. And apparently the soil there, down just a little bit below the surface, there's a layer of real flat, relatively thin rock. So when they cultivated the soil, guess what happened? They broke up this rock or turned it up. And they picked up this rock. I'm real sure that the stone fences I seen were hand rocks that had been picked up by hand and laid by hand. And there was quite a architecture or art form to building these fences out of these rock. They weren't round looking boulders. They looked like little slabs of rock. And some of these fences were, you know, when you've had a rock fence that we'd drive along, I'm sure it wasn't all the same owner, but miles and miles along the road, here's a rock fence that had been built with rocks picked up out of the field. So he says here that he fenced it. How did he fence it? Most likely this fence was made of the rocks that had been gathered out of the field in that time that we're talking about. In this Bible times, he's talking about gathering up the rocks, building the fence. But remember, we're not just talking about a literal vineyard. We're talking about an allegory here. He's talking to us allegorically. All right? So he says here, "And he fenced it and gathered out the stones thereof and planted it with" what kind of vine? The choicest vine, a specific type that would and should bring forth a bumper crop, a valuable source of revenue, of income. So still talking about this is an allegory. He's talking about a vineyard, In this song, he's talking about a vineyard in the story, but he's telling this to give us a deeper meaning, a spiritual meaning, to teach a lesson meaning. He says, so it's this vineyard is not just any ordinary vineyard. It's one that we gathered up the stones out of the field. We built a fence out of the stones, most likely, and then we planted it with the best variety that we could possibly get. You know that when God chose Abraham, why did he choose him? He was a man of integrity. He chose Abraham because he believed that he would train up his children to follow the same path. He didn't choose someone that had no desire to pass on something. He didn't choose someone that was inconsistent. He chose someone that had great potential. What did he plant here? The choicest vine. So he says, going on in the description, and he built a tower in the midst of it. Our Sunday school lesson this morning talked about the purpose of the tower. Why would you build a tower? It's a place for observation. Maybe it's a structure that would bring identity. This is the vineyard. Not just any old vineyard, but this is the vineyard. This is something that others walking by would say, well, that belongs to whoever it might be. He said he also made a wine press therein. He equipped it with the necessary machinery. You know, one of the greatest objectives that I've had in my career, I want to have the tools to do the job. And it really annoys me when my tools are not where they ought to be. You ought to live with me. It really bothers me when I go to use the tool that I gave my hard-earned money for and it's not there. It really bothers me. He says, I made a wine press. I equipped this vineyard not to just raise the grapes, but to process them where there would be a finished product. Something that is not just... Have you ever hauled any scrap metal off? I'll tell you how I haul scrap metal off. Throw it all in the truck, take it there, I weigh in, I dump it out, and I weigh out. That's how I take scrap metal off. But I know people that don't do it that way. They get all the non-ferrous metals separated from the ferrous metals. They put the aluminum in one pile and the brass and the steel and the cast iron in another pile. And if the steel is very long, they cut it up to where it says certain length. It can't be over long and it can't be over short. And the stuff that's like sheet metal, they put it in a separate pile. The fella shows up at the shop. He says, won't you let me take care of the scrap? I'll split it with you. I thought, not a whole lot, but okay, whatever. At least I won't have to haul it off. First time he hauls it off and he brings me back this big chunk of change. He said, man, we done pretty good today. I thought, yeah, we really did. I'm glad the only part I had in it was taking the money. Because he spent half a day out there sorting through my scrap iron, you know, separating the brake drums from the other stuff, from the radiators, and then he took the radiators apart. He cut them up with a torch and took the steel and the plastic off of the aluminum and the brass and all of that, and it paid off. So this vineyard was equipped. He didn't just produce grapes, all right? He produced grape juice. That's what he was intending to do. So he had it all set up. He said, I made a wine press therein. And he looked that it should bring forth grapes. And what did he get? Wild grapes. Well, you know, there's nothing like buying the tool to do the job, have the work to do, and then you go to do it. I got to improvise again. I don't have the tool that I thought I had. You know, somewheres I've misplaced it, or somebody borrowed it and didn't bring it back, and I don't have my tool. So here we go, trying to improvise and get the job done. Have I done it all? He said, and we'll go on to read this here in a minute, but he said, I did it all. I planted this vineyard. It was in a very fruitful hill. The location and the raw material, there are some places in our nation that the soil is more fertile than others. Y'all know that? There are some places that if you plant corn, it's kind of miraculous if it sprouts and grows. And there's other places you just kind of get corn close to the dirt and it produces. There's nothing, it's just different places. I grew up in southeast Missouri, and when I grew up down there, nobody raised corn. It's just not a natural corn place. But I go back down there now, and there's some people raising corn. I don't know what little tricks they're doing, but they're raising corn down there. But it's not a natural corn-producing soil down there. But I picked a very fruitful hill, is what he said. I gathered out the rocks. I built a fence. I put up a tower. I let everybody know this is my vineyard. I put the wine press in. I picked the best variety to plant. And what happened? Wild grapes. Instead of the grapes he expected. Instead of the choicest grapes and juice that could be harvested, I got wild stuff. I'm not talking about wild as in just rambunctious or things like that. I looked up wild grapes. There is such a thing as wild grapes. That's where tame grapes came from, if you want to think of it that way. And there are places that in our forest that you will find wild grapes, and they're very edible, although they taste better, they say, after at least the first frost. They might be a little tangy before that. And they're not very big. They're not going to be quarter size. They're going to be kind of small. There's such a thing as wild strawberries. They're kind of small too. And there's such a thing as other wild blackberries. Y'all ever pick any wild blackberries? And guess what? Wild blackberries are generally smaller than tame blackberries. And they always have thorns. And you can actually have tame blackberries that don't have thorns. They wouldn't survive very good in the wild. But anyway, wild grapes, they weren't as tasty, and they didn't produce like they should have. That's the two things we need to keep in mind as we go forward. And we begin looking back at verses 3 through 7 that we read. Isaiah asked the people. In verse 3, he says, "And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard." Now, if you'd done what I done, what would you do now? If you had planted a vineyard, if you'd have took the pains, and if you'd have took the... Remember, this is an allegory. This is like a parable. He's telling a story to get people to engage their minds and think about something much deeper than just a vineyard. But he said this was an ideal setup. Very fruitful hill. Dug out the rocks. Built a fence. Built a tower, built a wine press, planted it with the choicest vines. And what did I get? Wild grapes. What do you think I ought to do? He says, "You men of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem, I pray you, I'm asking you, betwixt, judge, or make a determination here between me and my vineyard. What should I do? What would you do? What could have been done, verse 4, more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. What else could a vineyard owner do? Now, if he had not dug out the rocks and just left the rocks, you'd say, well, man, it would have done better if you would have dug the rocks out. But he already did that. If you would have built a fence and kept the varmints out. But, well, I did that. If you would have built a tower so we could have kept, we could have watched for birds or whatever that could have come in to eat the grapes. We could have kept a better watch if we just had a tower. I did that. If you would have planted the right species of grapes. He did, didn't he? He did it all. I made the wine press. I think it was one that others would have come by and said, well, I wish I had a wine press like that. He did it. There was nothing that he could, and that's the point he's making here. He says, what could have been done more to my vineyard than I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. Why did I get wild grapes? Why did I get those little grapes that have to be cured, or you got to wait on them to really get some flavor out of them? Why couldn't I just had some really sweet grapes right off of the vine? Why couldn't I had those big grapes that's as big as the end of my thumb or big as a Stewart pecan? Y'all know what that is? Why couldn't I had grapes like that instead of these little old bitty things that's the size of a sweet pea? I don't know. Maybe they're a little bit bigger than that. What else could I have done? And then he goes on in verse 5. And now go to, I'll tell you, in the old English here is a little bit confusing maybe to us today. But he says, and now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up. And I'll break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down. And I'll lay it waste. It shall not be pruned nor digged. But there shall come up briars and thorns. I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it. Have your parents ever told you, don't make me spank you? Ever heard that expression? Whether it's wise or not, I'm not here to debate that, but I've been told that. Been a long time ago now. Don't make me punish you. But he says, here's what I'm going to have to do. This is a situation I'm in. I've done everything possible to make this vineyard a productive vineyard. I planted it in. I chose a very fruitful hill to plant it in. I dug out the rocks. I built the fence. I done it all. I planted it with the best vines possible. And all I got is wild grapes. So here's what I'm going to do. I've been forced to do this. I don't have another choice. He says, for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel. He gives us a little bit of an explanation here. What he's talking about. He's not talking about a vineyard. He's talking about people. He's not just talking about wild grapes that are small and the flavor can be pretty tart. He's not just talking about wild strawberries that's little bitty things. He's not talking about wild blackberries with the big long thorns. He's not talking about fruit that hadn't been nurtured. He's talking about something that has been cultivated for flavor, for size, and quantity of the harvest. God cultivated the descendants of Abraham to be a powerful force for his cause. And what was he getting? Wild grapes. That's what he said. Wild grapes. So he goes on to say, "For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts," 7th verse, "is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plant." And he looked for, he says, I'm shifting out of the allegory mode. I'm not just, this is the message. So we have a message this morning. We can talk about vineyards and we can talk about wild grapes and we can talk about all the preparation that goes into making a vineyard, and I am not a grape keeper or whatever that name, whatever that vineyard worker would be called. I'm not that person. Don't have much understanding in that. But now he says, I'm going to talk to you about the real thing. The real thing is this. The vineyard is the Lord of hosts. He says the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel. It's the people. It's you. That's what he told them. He was talking to the folks at Jerusalem. He said, the vineyard is you. And the men of Judah, his pleasant plant. And he looked for the judgment. But behold, oppression. He looked for a end result. He looked for his people to stand up in the face of opposition. He looked for them to be able to make sound decisions when somebody come with moldy bread and all of that. He looked for judgment. But what did he find? Oppression. They become victims, didn't they? Somebody showed up with wore out shoes and moldy bread, and they ended up, those people ended up being a plague to them. They became victims. They went to Ai and they became a victim. They got beat by a little group of people. They shouldn't have never had any battles with the Philistines. They became a victim. You remember Goliath standing up there and defying all the armies of Israel? They became victims. They were in oppression. You remember how many times they fell under the jurisdiction and they were subject to the conquest of others, nations? God didn't plan it that way. He chose a very fruitful hill. He dug out all the rocks. He planted the choicest vine. He set up the walls. All of this. He gave them manna in the wilderness. Gave them quail when they asked for it. Rock, water came out of rocks. What else could he have done? They crossed the river on dry land. Fire came down and burned up the sacrifice. All of those things? Wild grapes. He says, instead of judgment, behold oppression. For righteousness, when he looked for righteousness, behold a cry. Instead of integrity, I just can't do it anymore. So, today, can we apply this allegory to us? I think we should. What did the Lord do for us? Any of us here say that you're a child of God spiritually? By the grace of God, I am. Any of us profess to be born again? I do. And I hope you do too this morning. So the big question is, When God looks on me, does he see wild grapes? Those little bitty things that's kind of tart? You know, when we get things just right in our garden, we can reap a tremendous harvest. My dad had a green thumb on both hands. We raised a big garden, as big as our backyard would support, when I was growing up at home. I remember sitting down, I've told this many times now, but I remember sitting down at the supper table at the end of the day, and after I got to be 10 or 12 years old, I started realizing most of the stuff on the table we grew in the backyard. We had rabbits and chicken. We ate a lot of fried rabbit and a lot of fried chicken. And all the vegetables, whether it was beet pickles or green beans or mashed potatoes, we raised it right out there, right outside the back door. I remember one day, or one year, my dad had planted potatoes. The neighbor accused him of planting it in the wrong sign of the moon and said, they'll just all go to vine and you won't have any potatoes. And they did. They was huge potato vines. And we got time to dig our potatoes, and the neighbor came over and he said, well, Les, have you got any potatoes under there? And just at that time, we turned up a potato that was about as big as this Kleenex box. And Dad picked it up and he said, how's that for size? And the neighbor said, hump, and he just went on home. But that's the way it was at my house. I have some tomato cages that my dad built at my house, and they're about shoulder high to me. And many times I saw my dad's tomato plants grow to the top of that and then back down the side and just be loaded with tomatoes. We always had more tomatoes than we knew what to do with. If you get it right, you get a big harvest. If you do it right. God did it right. He gave his only begotten Son that we could be saved and we could be delivered from the power and the authority of sin. We can be different now. So what's Christ done for us? Is there anything his grace won't help us do? Is there anything that he won't forgive? One scripture says, is his arm shortened that he cannot save? No, it's not. So what does he deserve to get out of our lives? Wild grapes? Does he deserve to get, when he looks on us for judgment in our own lives? Are we going to make the choices that we stand up for what is right? Is there going to be judgment in our own hearts, in our own lives? Or is he going to find oppression? We're going to find that we gave in and we become a servant to something else. Is he going to find righteousness? Or is he going to find us crying because we're a victim? I believe that the Lord has done everything he can for us. He's offered us a plan of salvation. He has invited us to come and to be a child of God. He's invited us to be adopted, a child of the King. I would like to end maybe with a verse over here in John, the 16th chapter and the 8th verse. Jesus speaking here, he's specifically speaking to his disciples. And if we've been born again, if we've been saved by the blood of the Lamb, then we should be a disciple today. He says in the 8th verse, and when he come, he will reprove the world of sin. I believe that. And of righteousness and of judgment. Where are we going to stand when we stand before the Lord? Is he going to say, to those that are in his presence, is he going to say to the angels, this is my vineyard, the vineyard of my well-beloved, and this is just wild grapes. Can you judge between? What should I do? What else could I have done? Is there anything that I didn't do? And it's not going to look good if all we've been able to give back to the Lord is wild grapes. I don't want to be in that place, and I don't want you to be there either. So I just want to challenge us this morning. Are we, where's the judgment in our own lives? Where's the righteousness in our own lives? You know, I would like to look around at the world around us, and, you know, there's a lot of people I'd like to straighten out. I'll just be real frank with you. But they don't give me that chance. There's not many people that comes and says, you know, that I really got problems with. They don't come to me and say, you know, if you see something in me, why don't you just tell me what I ought to do? I haven't had that conversation. And I'll tell you that any time I have thought I was going to tell somebody what they ought to do, usually they tell me I don't have any business telling them that. But us, we have a choice. Do we have judgment in our hearts and lives? Are we allowing righteousness to blossom and mature? I believe he done everything. I don't think we can fault the Lord for what he's provided us. He's provided a stable environment for us. He's provided this right soil. He's built a wall around us. We could probably preach a message on every one of these things. But he's provided a wall of protection. He's dug out the rocks. He's provided a tower. He's provided a wine press. He's planted the best. He's given us the best vines to plant. What comes out of it? Wild grapes. So what happened in Isaiah's time, Lord help me to produce something besides wild grapes. You pray for me.